Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. Welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Patrick Moore, and Patrick is basically one of our key people at AYC. And he came to me not too many, like a couple weeks ago, and he said, I think that we need to do a Heartbreak Kids with you, Taylor. So this is a special edition of the Heartbreak Kids with me, Taylor Hunt. All right. So welcome, Patrick.
Thank you.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Again, I just really wanted to take the opportunity to give both your local students here in Columbus and all of your other students worldwide an opportunity to hear from you.
Sure.
Just because.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I'm down with it. Maybe I'm the original Heartbreak Kid.
You are. I mean, come on. Plus, a lot of us only have access to you for an hour and a half to 2 hours a day, and we don't really talk because we practice.
Yeah.
So.
Or you get a one-liner.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You throw out some very, very funny or mean comment, and then we go home.
It's never mean. Yeah. Actually, I'm quite
constructive.
Nice. Now I'm quite nice. I've gotten softer. I mean, it's still direct, but it's also like, you know, I'm softer. My practice feels different nowadays. So
now you say your practice.
Mm-hmm.
Your practice feels different, or your practice as a teacher feels different?
Both. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've softened a lot as a teacher, and also what I expect from my students has softened. I mean, I'm still quite direct and quite hard, and I ask a lot of them, but there's something, you know, my heart is a little bit more open. My practice is a lot softer nowadays. I'm not after anything anymore. You know, I'm just like in the moment, and I'm doing the best I can, and I'm practicing with a certain level of focused energy, and it feels good today, and it hasn't always felt good. I mean, there's times where I was maybe making it not feel good, and I don't want to do that anymore.
So was that through you forcing your practice, or you forcing things in life, or how'd you get to this stage, this point in your practice that you finally feel like you're softer? Now, yeah. Mind you, I'm sure a lot of your students worldwide would be like, what?
Yeah.
Soft.
Well, I mean, it's all relative. I mean, I'm still maybe, you know, I still have like a lot of, you know, intensity behind me. That hasn't changed. It just, you know, I just arrived at this point where, you know, I got these kids, you know, like these two little boys and this little girl. And what I realized is that my strength is not my greatest asset. Like, I'm extremely strong. I can withstand torture. You know, I can withstand torment, and I can withstand negative self-talk and all of these things that are really, you know, traumatic, addiction and disease and, you know, losing friends. I can withstand all of this stuff, but truly the thing that makes me, that is actually my strength or my greatest attribute, is really the fact that I'm okay with being vulnerable. I'm okay with changing and being open. And that's my greatest asset. The vulnerability and me just being open. It's not from giving people a hard time. It's from that sense of, you know, I am who I am. You can like me or you cannot like me aspect. And I'm an open book, you know.
Well, I would say based on what you just said, you're probably a stronger person today than you were, even when strength was your greatest asset.
Sure.
The fact that you just said that vulnerability and to be open is now your greatest asset.
Yeah.
I find that to be stronger.
Yeah. And, you know, I needed to be strong because I didn't, you know, in my addiction years, I didn't believe in myself. I had very low self-esteem. I had very low confidence. I was wearing a mask all of the time. And, you know, I had to be strong for me because my friends were dying and I was like, how am I going to stay alive? And how you do that is you get super tough with your practice, with how you deal with life. I mean, it's just like nothing, you know, I was so driven and so focused, like, you know. And the reason why is because I got a second chance and it was like, okay, the second chance. You know, you don't want to waste it.
Right.
And, you know, all of a sudden, like, you get to a point and where that drive, like, comes to an end. And then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, well, what am I actually really about? And it's, of course, like, I'm still the same person, but there's just this other side of me that is growing that I didn't actually foresee that's growing. As I got these kids, I opened my heart and I opened my life up in the book that I wrote and, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
So I'm just in a different place.
And do you think that hardness that you kind of became known for was a development of how hard you had to be to get through the addiction?
Yeah.
So absolutely. Like just that mindset kind of developed your style as a practitioner and teacher.
Yeah.
And then now you're slowly, you know, cultivating a different practice, which you're still hard but in a good way. And you're still,
yeah. I mean, I still can push people. I'm not pushing people. It's just like, you know, it's just developing another set of characteristics.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's actually a more rounded individual instead of like, I'm only this or only that. And it's like, I just feel more balanced in the sense of how everything is like, being approached. I'm more settled in my own skin than I've ever been.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you once told me, I'm sure you told many people, is if you're not growing, you're dying. Or if I'm not growing, I'm dying. Yeah. So you're showing a little bit of growth in this.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a student. I continue to grow. I continue to learn. I continue to grow and learn with teaching. I mean, I'm still doing the work. And that's what's, you know, quite powerful. I haven't arrived at anything. You know, like I'm a student. I'm just further along on the path than some of the people that I'm teaching. But
so you haven't arrived, but are you chasing something right now?
No, I don't feel like I'm chasing anything. I mean, I'm not. At one point, I was chasing poses. At other times,
that's awesome to admit.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, you know, let's be real. I mean, I'm just said I'm trying to be. I'm open. You know, it's like,
right.
Of course, you know, like I'm.
Chasing, we all do it.
Chasing the third series. Yeah, we do all do it. You know, we're lying to ourselves if we think we're not doing it. And you know, I've had a bunch of growth and development as a result of chasing that stuff. You know, but it's I don't confuse the means with the end. I don't confuse like this pose that I'm doing like with my personal growth or how I feel about myself or finding my passion, purpose, and, you know, finding my true sense of self.
Well, I mean, I think that you said it brilliantly when you were interviewing Flo and you were like, so when you can put your legs behind your head, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It's not about putting your legs behind your head. It's about what you learn while getting that pose or while working through something that's difficult.
Yeah, the stuff that brings it up.
And the stuff that brings it up. And so that's really cool to actually hear you, you know, practicing what you're preaching.
Yeah.
And in terms of that, and you're focusing a little bit more on it's termed seventh series.
Yeah.
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 So family.
Getting pulled in a lot of directions.
That's all right.
Yeah.
So you're softening, you're becoming a person that you're comfortable with, both as a teacher and as a student. And you just got back from Mysore a couple months ago with your teacher.
Right.
Because, so like, what is it, about 85% of the time, you could probably be considered a home practitioner.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know? I practice. Is it safe to say that?
I mean, yeah, of course.
That's your home.
Yeah, I'm by myself. That's, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. It's like, I'm figuring this stuff out on my own. And I go to Sherratt and I get the tips that I need and I get the adjustments that I need and I get the accountability that I need from him and all that stuff. But also, just to go back just a second, because
yeah.
you said something that I like
Please.
Struck a chord. I am comfortable being the hard person too. But I'm also today comfortable being different as well. And so, you know, like those aspects are,
they're both comfortable. Part of
me. Yeah, of course. Yeah. So I don't mean to throw us off subject or whatever, but
no,
it was just like, you know, I'm comfortable with both. I'm, you know, I feel comfortable and grounded in both, but yeah, I did just get back from India and I went there and I had maybe one of the best trips I've ever had. It was amazing. I mean, and part of it was because the mix of the people that were there were just some of the coolest people that I think maybe I've ever met. You know, the assistants were great. Sherratt was in a great mood. you know, it's important. You
oh, know,
it's
I
like
know.
If I'm in a bad mood, like the whole show is like in a bad mood. So I had a great trip. I got to really connect with my wife again. And that was like one of the things that is really important to me. And part of the reason why is because I've been traveling so much, man. You know, I've been traveling a lot.
Well, you were just talking and you were like, yeah, I got off a plane from Reno last night at midnight. And then you were, teaching at 5 a.m., 4:30 a.m.?
Yeah, yeah. I woke up, I went to bed at 11:30 and I woke up at 4. And I know how to do that. You know, I'm capable of doing that. I can access like a little bit of energy from other things. I of course didn't practice as a result of that.
Absolutely.
You know, like travel days or the day after travel is quite intense, but I was present in the room. I felt good. I mean, I know how to do that stuff.
You had a good energy. Well, I mean, you often are, I mean, you're teaching throughout the week here at Ashtanga Yoga Columbus and then jumping on a plane, wherever that may be, you're going and either that day or the next day or driving and you're teaching.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I teach a lot, but you know, someone asked me in Reno, they were like, how do you do this? Like, what is this, you know, craziness that, you know, why do you do it like this? And honestly, Patrick, it doesn't feel like work.
Right.
It's not work. You know, like I'm grateful and honored and, you know, I accept invitations from virtually anyone who lets me share my story because I get to go and talk about addiction and how it saved my life. And Ashtanga Yoga has like played this integral part of like me creating. That's why I'm sitting in front of these people. You know, and I don't know if everyone gets to talk about that stuff. I mean,
no.
I get to talk about from like a very, you know, I was living on the streets. So, you know, all of a sudden you're not living on the streets and I got a message to share and I'm okay with working hard. I'm good at working hard. I mean, if you pay attention to the things that I'm doing, like, you know, that I do a lot of things. I stay busy. I may be ADHD. I mean,
no, you are.
I've taken a few tests and I'm like way high on the spectrum, but I'm still, even though I might be that or might not be that, I'm centered, I'm focused, and like I'm trying to help people, normal people, addicts, you know, any of that stuff. I'm just trying to show up for them, you know, and that's what I'm doing. And so people are like, oh, I can't believe you travel so much. And it's like, no, I get to travel. I don't have to travel. I have a shala that is healthy. That, you know, has plenty of people coming to it. I could stay home and
you're grateful for the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. I could teach retreats and I could spend more time with my family and all of this stuff, but me and my wife are on the same page. Like we've both been given this opportunity to be different people. That's what we are. We're
this
different.
This is more
people.
Of a mission then.
This is a freaking mission. Yeah. It's like everything that I do from the t-shirts to the Heartbreak Kids to all of this stuff. It's all exposure, not necessarily for me. I mean, this is the first time I've been on my own show. It's like, it was never about that. It was always about like giving other people a chance to share their story, period. It was never about, I shared my book. I shared the story. I'm tired of talking.
Right.
About it, you know?
And we're not, I mean, we know your story. We
right.
just wanted to hear from you and to hear what's new and what's going on in your life. And So to hear that you say that it's you still have all of that excitement behind what you're doing and the message that you're, you know, yeah. delivering, and, you know, this is your life's work.
It's
and
my life's work.
And I find it funny every time you do like one of the ask me a questions on Instagram, somebody like, when are you coming here?
Right.
And your response is always, invite me.
Yeah.
Because I know when you say invite me, you'll go.
Oh, yeah, I will.
Because that's another opportunity for you
yeah.
to help somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I'm being ambitious in the fact that I want to go talk to these people. Like, I want to go help their practice. I want to go share about, like, how everyone can find something different in their lives. I mean, you know, there's a lot of unhappy people. I was one of them. I was depressed, anxious, you know, all of the above.
Same.
And I'm not that anymore. And there needs to be some hope in our society today. I mean, you can hear it in my voice, you know, like you can hear like the excitement in my voice. Like when I start to talk about this stuff, like it's not a chore,
right?
It's not a chore. It's never like, oh my God, I got to go travel. I mean, sometimes I don't want to go. I mean, just the normal person, or sometimes they'll say like, hey, you know what? There's 50 people. And I'll be like, man, that makes me really nervous and uncomfortable.
Right.
Like, you
know, there's going to be a queue at the door.
Or because, you know, you go there and you know, share your story or whatever, and you're vulnerable to 50 people or 30 people or however many it is. It doesn't matter. It's intimidating.
But within every section or every, you know, 50 or 30 people, there's an opportunity to help that one person in the room.
Yeah.
Which brings me to the question that you've kind of become this foster teacher to a lot of people around the world who need a teacher through your workshops. You're traveling on weekends, you're giving these workshops, and a lot of time you're coming away with, you know, because it's to your belief, it's to my belief, and a lot of the Ashtanga tradition that you need a teacher.
Right.
And
I fundamentally believe that everyone needs a teacher.
And I agree. And you're providing, you know, a lot of these people with a teacher. You know, through, I mean, social media and online,
sure.
You know, and all that.
Yeah.
That's different. I mean, you have your home students and then now you have students all across the world.
Yeah. I mean, I do. And that's, again, I'm grateful for it. I mean, that's what I'm supposed to do. You know, in Reno, I got my chart read, my, you know, Vedic chart.
Okay.
And the person I was staying with, you know, said to me, she said, you know what, your chart aligns perfectly. She said it has the hand of God in it. And if you know anything about Vedic astrology, that the hand of God basically is like this certain shape that basically tells you like what you're supposed to do with your life. And mine points to that I'm supposed to be a teacher for humanity. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Wow.
I'm supposed to be a teacher for humanity. She's like, what you're doing is exactly what you're supposed to be doing. I was like, I could have told you that. You know, like we didn't have to get our chart. I didn't have to get my chart right. I could have told you I'm doing what I'm
supposed
to be
doing. Here's my book.
Right. Right. And so, you know, I'm supposed to be teaching. You know, I got these students all over the place. And it's hard sometimes, like, to, you know, prop up some people, or it's hard to keep them accountable, and sometimes people put me up on a pedestal and I'm not necessarily comfortable with that. You know, I'm not trying to be a guru or anything like that. I mean, I'm just trying to help people.
Right.
You know, like I, you know, I'm just a person that has learned a lot through yoga for myself, for, you know, and I've learned that knowledge so that I can give it away. Because in sobriety, they told me that if I don't give it away, I can't keep it. And so I give it away continuously,
wow,
over and over and over again. I go to Mysore, I go to workshops with other teachers, people I respect, and I get filled up. And, you know, I study a lot. I read books. I mean, if anyone knows me, I mean, I am constantly reading and learning about different techniques and paying attention to what the vinyasa people are doing and different modes of, you know, yoga or styles of yoga. Like, I'm paying attention to all of it. Like, I pay attention to some of the best arm balancers and stuff like that. And I I mean, I learn it so I can give it away.
Right. And yeah. that's both surprising and somewhat not surprising just based on the fact that you're one of the more traditional teachers
yeah.
out there who believes in following the system.
Right.
As it was taught.
I do believe that. I believe that Sharat has given me the blessing to teach people, and that means I need to teach it inside of integrity.
Right.
And I teach it how he teaches it. And how he teaches it is that people are individuals, and we have this perfect system of yoga that can fit to anyone if you're smart enough. If you think about it as a dogmatic thing, you're pretty much screwed. You know, like it's one size fits all. And that's, or excuse me, it's like you got to fit into this size regardless of what you are.
Right.
And you know, like how I've been taught and how I've seen Sharat teach is from a very traditional perspective where he's just like teaching the people that are in front of him the best way that he knows how. That's what I'm trying to do too. And sometimes I make wrong decisions and with people's practices, and sometimes I make right decisions. I like to think that nowadays I am about 90-10, you know, like I feel pretty good in the fact of I know how to like guide someone's practice. Very good at the strategy of how to teach the person in front of me.
So you got your average up.
My average is up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. My average is up. It's chess, you know, it's like, you know, you're trying to get the most out of someone. Some people you got to push, some people you got to be loving towards or compassionate towards. Like some people like need accountability. Other people need to like, you know, see you practicing the other limbs, like other, you know, just it's a wide range of stuff.
But by sticking to the system, it allows you to approach each individual student where they are.
Yeah.
And to teach the person.
Yeah. I mean, that's what people get confused. It's like, oh, because this person, Sharat, taught me this way, everyone needs to be taught this way. And that is not the experience that I had at all, period. It's not the experience I had at all. Every person in the room was getting something different out of them. They weren't getting the same feedback. I mean, I've assisted plenty of times in Mysore to realize that he gives some people a hard time. He gives some people a break. He gives some people massive amounts of poses. He breaks egos by not giving any for years. You know, like he, all this stuff. And I mean, I learned from the best, man. There's Absolutely. No one better than him. And I've learned from the best. I mean, he's my mentor. He's my teacher. He's guru. He's a special person in my life. I mean, half of the back of the book is about my relationship to him in India.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's to my understanding that that's how you teach. I mean, being right. in your room for a while now and watching you teach or watching you, you know, talk to the people around me.
Right.
It's, I mean, that's how you approach it. I mean, I would think that's why.
It's not cookie cutter stuff.
No.
Yeah. This is like advanced level teaching that, you know, this is not like fresh out of teacher training kind of thing. This is above and beyond. I mean, you're teaching like big lessons, like how to get people to believe in themselves or overcome demons or obstacles. Mm-hmm. But you're also teaching like how to move your body, how to be present in your body, how to move your breath in your body, how to move with your breath as you do these things, how to stay focused. I mean, those are like smaller lessons, which have huge implications, but also these huge lessons too.
So you're both speaking, or you're teaching both the surface level things that you can evaluate, you know, presently in there, but also the internal things that you're picking up on and going off of.
I mean, I know whether I'm teaching the person a big lesson or a small lesson.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's simply observance. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. You know, you hang around Patrick's of the world enough, you know exactly how they tick. And it's like, okay, well, what's Patrick trying to get out of this? Or what's Susie trying to get out of this? Or Sarah getting out of this? You know, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like you can teach them how to move their bones and all that stuff. And you can teach them how to tie their breath to all of these movements. And you can tell them the power of that. And you can hold them to it. Teach them how to lift up and jump back. Or you can teach them like that they're capable of anything if they put their mind to it, and helping instill like discipline and self-confidence and self-esteem, you know, like I teach, here's how I teach. I basically dial it in where I really help them. And then I dial out and I start taking steps back on that specific pose or in their practice in general. And I'm like, I dial in and I dial out. Mm-hmm. I dial in, I dial out. And, you know, some people don't like the fact that they're not getting the same amount of attention or whatever, but they already got it. They've already matured. I'm backing off because they are capable of doing it on their own.
Because you've deemed them able to achieve what they need to do by themselves.
Yeah. And why would I become a crutch for someone? I've seen so much codependency in my life. Like, why would I become a crutch for people?
Is that your aversion to blocks?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Or, you know.
I know. I can't.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I can't. I'm going to empower the person. And, you know, it works for some people. I mean, I'm not everyone's teacher. Like,
no.
I mean, I'm not everyone's cup of tea. I get it. Like, I'm a pain in the ass sometimes. I'm direct. You know, people don't like the fact that sometimes they don't get attention. I don't over adjust. I mean, I adjust what people need. So it's, and it works. I mean, we got, you know, plenty of students at AYC.
Yes, we do. Yeah. I mean, and finding a teacher is it's a very important part of the practice, in my opinion. And it's a very hard thing to do in choosing a teacher or a person that's, you know, both, you know, good for you, good for your practice. And, you know, there's a ton of variables that go into that. And, you know, one of the things that intrigued me was the fact that you learned from Sharad.
Yeah.
And that the direct lineage and parampara, and the fact that I could immediately trace my, you know, practice right back to the main.
Yeah. It's like one degree of separation.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Like, what's the Kevin Bacon thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, exactly. It's the Shaka version of Kevin Bacon.
Right.
That's
right.
A t-shirt.
1 degree of separation from Sharad.
So, I mean, that's one of the things you look for, but I think that that's very important. And, you know, and that's something that a lot of these people, these home practitioners are looking for, because, you know, it more than ever, I'm starting to see like almost a migration to Columbus. Like certain people are like, they pop up in the Shala now, and like, they're, you're getting a ton of people coming in from out of town. They're just like, yeah, we came to, you know, we met Taylor at a workshop and now we came to Columbus to practice with him.
Right.
Yeah, and that's cool. And that's welcomed energy too.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, and there's definitely like enthusiasm with that kind of stuff too. Cause they come with renewed sense of energy or purpose or something like that. And so it's good. It's good for the whole community to kind of feel that, but yeah, it is happening. And, you know, as I move into, you know, 2019, I have like these practice weeks where I'm like doing these practice weeks where like I'm basically telling everyone, hey, I'm going to be here. We're going to have, you know, 6 days of Mysore. And, you know, we're basically going to go over like specific topics with each one. And it's because there's a lot of people that want to know where I'm at what time, and can we come visit you in Columbus? So we're just trying to put them all in, you know, certain weeks. So as 2019, I'm going to be home more. And then 2020, I'm going to be home even more. So,
that's great.
Yeah.
And then, so tell me, like, during this week, it will be the opportunity to come and practice for 6 days.
Yeah.
And then learn a specific, there's a specific topic that you're teaching.
Yeah, so, like, we've had one already, and the first one was basically, like, a practice week that dealt with adjustments and helped people, like, understand and deepen their teaching. This next one that's in April is practice week 2, and it's the primary series, and we basically go over every aspect of the primary series. It's for the home practitioner, basically, or someone who doesn't have a teacher that's like, you know, standing over top of them every single day and like, you know, pushing them or whatever. And so, I mean, the format is really to basically like deepen and help people understand what the primary series is so that they can go back and teach it, or they can deepen their experience with it so that they can understand it a little bit better. I mean, and from like a personal standpoint, the reason why I put them on the schedule is because I really do want to travel less, you know? And so being home, this was 4 weeks out of the year that I was home. That's not the only time that I'm home, but it's, you know, it gives me an opportunity to kind of reconnect with like some of my out of town students that might not be able to attend a workshop, but want to come for a longer period of time and come to Columbus, because AYC is awesome.
In giving somebody the opportunity, coming from somebody who just went through a little stint of home practicing, I had no idea just how hard it is and how much you miss a community. So having the opportunity 4 weeks out of the year to come hang out with us and to practice in a room with you and to kind of get that intensive, I think it's a really special opportunity for these people to kind of just like dive in deep and to give them a little bit of momentum going back to their practice and to check in with you.
Well, I mean, home practice is hard, you know, it's super hard, you know, like all of a sudden, you know, if you're not like a master at paying attention to every single detail, you can lose it. You lose stuff. I mean, whether it's chaturanga or, you know, the momentum or the motivation or inspiration in order to practice, like those are all things that, you know, I think that are key, and you don't get them at a home practice. It becomes more about discipline and more about a sustaining instead of like growing in our practice, getting deeper into our practice. I mean, that's what a teacher is good for. That's what also a community is good for as well.
Absolutely. Well, it's, you have somebody else to kind of give you that push in the right direction, and you're not controlling everything. And it's such intense work that doing it yourself is difficult.
Of course I'm not a guru, but like I never want to be a guru, but really the basis of real teaching is not to show people like how awesome you are. The basis of teaching is really to point people in a direction and like to help them like see the light at the end of the tunnel and point them in that direction towards the light. And so a home practitioner doesn't have that opportunity. You know, they don't have that opportunity to like have someone else be like, this is the direction that we're going. And we might fall off the path, and we might do good, we might do bad. We might not show up, we might show up, we might push too hard. And, you know, obviously there's a figuring out period. But the teacher, or the aspect of the teacher, is really to just, you're basically pulling back the bow so that the arrow gets shot in the right direction. And like, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, that's what a teacher does.
Hmm. It's a facilitator.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there can be change and growth and, you know, they're pushing like we talked about earlier. You know, there's a bunch of other things, a better opinion on how to deal with an injury, how to move forward, how to deepen your practice. Like maybe there's something that you're missing or haven't really focused on. And so all of that stuff is really found by, you know, having a teacher. That's why home practice is so hard.
Well, it's also a beautiful science that you've trained over the years to look at and the psychology behind it.
Of course.
And all of those things that go into it. And it is terribly hard to do a home practice, and big ups to everybody who does do it.
I mean, the videos that I've been doing have been for home practitioners.
Have you gotten good response?
Yeah. I mean, the Instagram stuff that we did was for home practitioners. These weeks are for home practitioners. I mean, our student group that we have is really for home practitioners. You know, like people to check in with someone. We're not always good at having a healthy perspective on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everyone needs someone. And I'm not this for everyone, but maybe for some. But we're holding up a mirror. And you're able to give feedback. You're able to say, hey, you know what? This works for someone, or it doesn't work for someone, or this is what you should be doing, or this is what you're not doing. I mean, I believe in teachers like, 12-steppers believe in sponsors. You know, like you can't get sober without a sponsor. You can practice, but the question is can you get through all of the things that you have to get through? We're tour guides.
Absolutely.
Yeah, tour guides. We're not any better than anyone else or the students, but we're just further along on the, you know, on the trek, further along in the journey. We're just in front of them.
And I think that the potential for a more of a transformative experience is more likely to happen with the teacher and inside a Mysore room than it is. You know, I'm not saying it's not likely or not possible to happen through a home practice, because I'm sure it totally is. But the opportunity for that and the opportunity for change
Yeah, well, I mean, you get a bunch of people next to one another that are trying to be the best versions of themselves. And, you know, all of a sudden you get 20, 30, 40, 50 people in there that are all moving in the direction of, like, their best life or whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, that rubs off on people. You know, like, we see the addict that comes into our studio that, like, busts through a bunch of barriers. We see, you know, like, the girls that are heartbroken come in, and or guys that are heartbroken come in and repair their hearts. And, you know, we see people that come in with trauma, and like, we see these changes. I mean, we practice next to them, we don't talk, but you see the transformation. I mean, you see a person like achieve a certain posture, and that becomes powerful. It's like, because you know how hard that person worked at it. It's awesome.
You're watching their journey.
Yeah.
In their work.
Yeah. And I mean, it's such a privilege and an honor. Like, I mean, I'm grateful for the students that are there. And part of the reason why is because, I mean, I never thought I was going to have a community. I never thought I was going to have anyone around me. You know, I was a person that, like, people didn't want to hang out with.
But you know? Your students also get to share that process with the other students as well.
Yeah.
And they're watching it happen, and yeah, seeing somebody next to me get pincha, I'm like, oh, outstanding.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so the community sees it, I see it, the person sees it, and all of a sudden you get everyone moving in that direction. And it's like, it becomes a very powerful thing.
And, you know, and I know that, you know, underneath all of that, they're working towards all those emotions and traumatic events deep inside that are kind of releasing all those karmic knots, which is just another layer of awesomeness.
Yeah. I mean, and it's working when it's doing that stuff too, you know, and you can see it on someone's mat when someone's having a difficult experience, and, you know, all of a sudden, like, the person next to them understands that they're having that experience. And because it's a safe and healthy space for people to do that, it's like, okay, well, then that becomes allowed and acceptable. And so then more transformation and more, you know, honesty and more nonviolence, more of these things can actually happen there. And it's cultivated. It's like a soup, you know, like, mm-hmm, you put these ingredients in the pot. You know, you might get a few ingredients that you don't want and might have to, like, you know, get rid of them or whatever. But, like, for the most part, like, you're churning this community, this transformation, these poses, this trauma. Like, all of a sudden, it's like, I don't want that trauma anymore. And this happened on, like, a micro level and also, like, a macro level with every student. You know, it's like this mixing pot of these things that come up.
And
brings
this
out the best, and it brings out sometimes the worst. And we can identify those and be like, hey, you know what? I want more of that. Or I don't want this anymore.
And that could be referred to when you will be like, the energy in the room,
yeah,
it's feeling good or yeah, feeling intense. That's,
I mean,
that's the stirring of the pot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and sometimes, like, the energy will be dictated by me, and other times I let the energy be dictated by other people in the room. And so, sometimes I can feel whether or not someone is, like, having a really emotional day, and that energy of that practice or that personality of that person can change the feel of the room. And so as a teacher, you're the cook. You're trying to, it's like, oh, you know what? That's too much salt. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't taste good. And it's like, it's okay if a class ends with that sort of feeling, but it's like, you don't want that around all the time. You know, you want the good stuff. And so you're trying to, like, cook it down. You're trying to get better at it. You're trying to let people have that experience. But yeah, the energy of the room is like a powerful transformative tool.
It is. It's sudden, profound, and it's personal self-realization.
Yeah.
All in one,
right,
both for you and for your student.
Yeah. I mean, cause I learned so much I mean, I've learned more teaching than practicing, you know, I mean,
that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've learned more teaching than practicing.
Because I firmly believe that it's almost like a life cycle, because one fosters the other.
Yeah.
And that keeps your ball rolling too.
Yeah, right.
So,
I mean, you know, these practice weeks, which started this whole conversation, I mean, like, they are, every time I do, like, a thing like this, an intensive or immersion or whatever you want to call it, I mean, we just happen to call it practice weeks, you know, there's unfolding that happens. You know, I've traveled to other places and seen how people jump back that I've never seen anyone jump back that way. And then it changes my whole thought process. Or I see someone, how they backbend and how that community has been cultivated to practice a certain way, backbending, or it doesn't matter what aspect. And then all of a sudden, like, I realize that there is more to the teaching than what, you know, what I'm currently teaching.
So it opens up your mindset on techniques?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't, like specifically, I won't give new techniques until I try them. But yes, I'll implement them into my practice. I mean, my practice can't be the only thing that I teach from.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why is because it's my experience. Like, so my experience might help 50% of the people. But like by teaching and I see in these different perspectives, I think like traveling as much as I do is basically to kind of like open up this different aspect of like, oh yeah, like these different cultures do it differently. They use their bodies differently. They hold their bodies differently. And all of a sudden, like I get the next aspect of like, oh yeah, like the way that we're doing it might not be the best way for everyone, or the way that I'm doing it might not be the best way for everyone to do it. But then there's this other aspect of like, I've seen it another way. And it's okay that if someone wanted to do it another way, because it was, I don't know, in my opinion, like fundamentally sound. And so I'll try it, I'll do it. And then, you know, what I'll do is I'll see a person with similar build, similar energy or personality that I saw at a workshop and be like, oh yeah, that's how that's supposed to be implemented mm-hmm. into that person's practice. So yeah, of course I'm learning all the time.
And that brings us back to pretty much 99% practice, 1% theory.
Yeah.
So, you know, by doing all these practices and by teaching and practicing teaching around the world, you're opening up to new techniques
yeah.
and re-implementing them.
Yeah. I mean, because we get really caught, or at least in my opinion, within the Ashtanga world, we get really caught on like, this is how I was taught. This is the only way that I'm going to teach. And I fundamentally do not believe that. I don't believe that. That is not how Sharat has ever taught me. When I assisted with him, like, he taught everyone different. He was looking at the bot, like, just like what I described. He looked mm-hmm. at these different people and said, is that okay or is that not okay? Or do I want it a different way? And obviously, he's a master at it, but it's like, but if I only taught from the perspective of, like, how Sharat taught me, then I think that it limits the range or the effectiveness of my teaching because all of a sudden everyone has to fit into my box. And I got longer legs. I got, you know, dad bod or you know, whatever you want to say. It's like, you know, and so my body frame might not actually be always a good place to teach from, you know.
But it also increases your ability to teach more people. And the opportunity to teach the masses, as opposed, not saying that you want to teach a bunch of people, but you know, keeping an open mind to new bodies, to new energy levels, yeah. to new and all that. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful. I mean, I've had amazing growth in my practice, but also like, you know, I've seen AYC students go through amazing growth. But I mean, I've grown as a teacher because I see it in a different perspective. And I think the other thing too is that everyone is, and yeah, I'm saying everyone. I know that, and it's not a generalization. Everyone wants to be like paid attention to, and they want someone else to care about their practice. You know, and so when a teacher comes and has all of these different perspectives, and then you're really able to like dial in and help that person on like a specific thing, it's compassion, it's, you know, intensity, it's new revived energy, it's all of these different things that are like, oh wow, it's freaking amazing.
It is nice.
Yeah.
I can say from personal experience, it is nice to have somebody or to have you.
Yeah. I mean, and people teach differently too. I mean, there's people that just let people come into the room you know, do whatever they want, you know, practice more of like a laissez-faire kind of, you know, attitude. And I've gotten less ridiculous over the years with the amount of like how strict I am. I've gotten a little looser because I realize it doesn't fit for everyone. But I mean, you know, my perspective is I want to help the people. Like, I'm engaged, you know. If I'm unengaged, it means I don't have a strategy on how to teach you. And I think that sometimes people maybe who have not been trained to teach Mysore specifically, they miss the mark. It's like, oh, I'm just giving adjustments here. And it's like, no, actually adjustments is like one layer and it's more like the basic layer. There's all of these other layers that, you know, there's a strategy on how to teach the person, you know, like you're trying to inspire them to practice more consistently. You're judging energy level, like stamina, like are they able to handle more? Are they having emotional practices continuously? If I give them Kapotasana, are they going to run away? You know, if I give them Pincha, are they going to bail out? You know, like, and so you're constantly, if I add dropbacks onto someone's practice, it like, am I going to get into a place of like where they, you know, feel like emotionally that they're not stable and grounded? Mm-hmm. And so that's all comes into consideration. And I'm thinking about all of it. Like I told a student just, you know, Thursday, I said, I've been thinking about your practice nonstop because I can't figure out how to get him to do a deep in his shoulder rotation to get his back open. Like I can't get it to happen. And I mean, he's been consistent for 3 years and it's like, okay, well, I gave him blocks. I gave him, you know, I gave him a wall for a little bit. Now I'm contemplating like, okay, well, are there other things that he can do in his practice? All of these just kind of mix up. And I think to talk about my point is that everyone teaches different. And like, I would want someone who's engaged instead of like, oh, let's just try this, you know, let's just see how you do. It's like, that's just not my personality.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I'm getting a strategy for the people so that I can help them. And everyone wants someone to pay attention to them. I want Sharat to pay attention to my practice. I want him to give feedback or give me more poses or less, you know, like.
And that's okay to say that I want somebody to pay attention to me and to participate in my practice and to take, you know, ownership of helping me get to somewhere.
I don't think that there's anything wrong with it. I think that it's, but you got to find the right person.
Well, that has also been frowned upon in certain ways when somebody is looked at like, I want attention, I want this, but really they're just reaching out to, I need help. I need somebody else to help me identify these negative habit patterns. So where I'm stiff, where all these things are living in me and, you know, and to help me push me in the right direction, open my shoulders, give me a block, write my name on it.
Yeah. I think that it's okay to ask for attention. It's just that new students need it, mm-hmm. you know, and people need clarity in their practice. There's so much like, I don't know, ambiguity. There's so much like gray area in the practice where like people want feedback, you know, like I get paid to give people feedback on what I think is the best thing for them. It's like, and not every teacher believes that. It's like, oh, you can do your practice. I'll support it with adjustment and help you on the hard pose. But it's like, I do that, but I mean, I feel like I try and do a lot more than that.
But in order to give that feedback, you have to see them and they have to commit and to show up and to be there, because the more consistent they are, the more you'll be able to help them in terms of seeing these patterns and to, you know, identify the things, everything that you just talked about. And once they commit to that, I feel like the process gets moving.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes. Yes and no. I mean, I feel like there's some people that I see very well, mm-hmm. and I see them almost instantly, and I can see, you know, trauma, and I can see these different things that they've had happen to them, and I can feel it, and I can talk to them a little bit and have a good understanding of how I'm going to teach this person. But there's also people that I don't see very well. And then there's, and so it just depends. The people that I don't see very well, I would say like, oh yeah, I need to see them consistently. But there's people that I see really well that are out of town students that will only come in for a month or, you know, every month or maybe once every quarter or something like that. And I'm able to see exactly what I need to see in order to teach that person. So it's very like, it's very individualized. There's not like, you know, I see everyone. Best standard practices is that I see their practice consistently so that I can give them feedback. But yes, I mean, but it, there's all different variations of it.
Or for a week, like 19.3, which is based on the second series.
Yeah, I mean, practice week three is all the second series. I'm pumped to teach it. Like it's, I mean, and again, it's like another opportunity for me to learn, because there's only been one other time where I taught a LET intermediate class. And so I don't get an opportunity to teach LET intermediate class. And so there's also like this thing where I was thinking about doing LET intermediate at AYC, but in order to do that, like, you know, I have to be proficient at it too. And I've been working at it for quite some time. I know the vinyasa count, but saying it out loud is much different than, you know, just knowing it in my head.
Is this your first time offering this opportunity to an intensive, a week-long intensive for the second series?
Yeah. I mean, I've done it in like, you know, a couple workshops where I broke it down. But yeah, this is the only time where we break down the count, adjustments. We have LET intermediate class. I mean, obviously there's Mysore in the morning. Yeah, and we break down every aspect of the second series. So I think we're also going to have, you know, another Sanskrit teacher come and you know, spend time with us too to talk about different aspects of it as well.
Well, and I can say from experience, I only took a small portion of the second series workshop that you offered in Chattanooga, but just the breakdown of each posture was really, really intuitive, and it was very helpful for at the time when I was working through Kapotasana. So.
Yeah, it is helpful. I mean, workshops are helpful. I'm a firm believer that, you know, the workshops serve a purpose for people because it gives them like a maybe a more full scope. Some people in Ashtanga yoga don't like them. You know, they think that we should be teaching Mysore style consistently. And I love Mysore style. It's like my favorite thing to teach. But you can really kind of hone in on specific things in like a posture that you might not get unless you're watching YouTube or if you're at a workshop. And so, yeah, I think it's very, I think it's important to basically address those things for sure.
And don't you believe that, so the deeper that you get into your practice, having this opportunity, so say you are a home practitioner and the farther you are into second series, having this opportunity to surround yourself with a group of people who are also practicing the same thing, this will give you a place to possibly progress within your practice and have you progress them to the next level or maybe help them break through.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, there's many different levels to it, but I mean, you know, like the home practitioner comes in and it's like they get feedback, they get community, they, you know, maybe get the next pose or that kind of stuff. And I think it's important.
Well, I mean, there is something called the second series crazies too.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
all everyone, those heightened emotions and
everyone kind of gets them. I mean, you know, I have my own opinions on that. But
maybe that's for the next podcast.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I just know that a lot of times you get what you, whatever you put into it is what you get out of it. And I think that there's been a lot of dialogue around how second series makes people crazy or makes them emotional or all this stuff. And someone's told them that before. And I think people have emotional time in the primary series too. But when they get, when people get to the second series, they've heard that there's like this emotional thing that, that happens. And it does, for sure. 100% it happens. But it's like you get what you put into it. And so all of a sudden, like everyone's like, oh, why am I so crazy? Or why am I so this? And it's like, well, because someone told you that one day that they were emotional. And it's not every day that's emotional in the second series. You know, emotions are just roller coaster rides.
That they are.
Sometimes you're on the roller coaster and sometimes you're watching it. And sometimes you're not even at the theme park.
And then so directly after, so you will be offering LET intermediate So just one.
Oh, at AYC?
Well, no, not at AYC, but during this week.
During this week, there's a LUT intermediate class.
Okay.
Yeah. There'll be a LUT intermediate class, and it'll be, I think it's on Saturday. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's basically gives me an opportunity to learn the count, and the whole group will be practicing the count. The vinyasa is obviously an important aspect of our practice, and so learning that is key.
And then for people who are interested in participating in this week, what level of, where do they have to be practicing through?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I mean, typically what we would say is ekapada.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what we put on the website, and we felt comfortable with, like, having people come to learn about it. They had to be taught up to ekapada.
Good. Well, that makes sense to me. And then the third practice or the fourth practice week will be focused around.
Fourth practice week is understanding drawbacks, understanding backbends, understanding TikToks and handstands, and then really transitions as well. So we take a look at all of the interesting transitions that happen in the practice, you know, jumping into Bhujangasana, jumping back, jumping forward, jumping out. All the unique things that happen, we break down anatomy-wise, like what people should be doing in order to keep shoulders safe and in order to one day lift up and jump back. Yeah, so it basically covers a lot of back bending and a lot of transitions.
Well, if this is also, I mean, I know it's designed for all students, but if a home practitioner is in mind for this, I can only imagine somebody who's working on DropX. This is like the best opportunity because I can't even fathom trying to learn that by myself.
Yeah. Oh, it's like nearly impossible. I mean, there's a couple techniques, but yeah, for sure. It's like you come in, you try and learn that aspect of dropping back.
So, I want to, just to wrap that up, I want to kind of discuss another aspect of what you do, which is the Trini Foundation.
Yeah.
And just kind of, there's a lot of really wonderful things going on right now, along with the logo, which looks really nice.
Yeah. It's awesome.
But nice. can you unwrap a little bit about what's going on?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have so many things going on with it. You know, it's basically taken us about 2.5 years to get organized. We've raised a lot of money fast. And we've been able to, you know, basically figure out how to get teachers to teach in treatment centers and develop the connections with treatment centers, which took a really long time. And then we also had to develop relationship with more teachers as well, so that they could teach the classes, because there's no use in saying that you can do a class without teaching it. So we've had very strategic growth in that area. And then the next thing is, like, we had to really pay attention to the strategic growth of partner studios. I want really every authorized teacher and Ashtanga community to be tied up into the Training Foundation, but it's just not feasibly possible right now. And part of the reason why is because from an organizational standpoint, we have to figure out how to consistently raise money in order to fund this. And so, and we've had very strategic growth on how we, like, move forward with this stuff. And the cool thing is, like, Sharat has been involved, and he's been able to kind of guide some of the stuff that we've done. And so the other cool thing is that, you know, we've tried to figure out how to raise money because we have this audience in the yoga community, but also I think everyone needs to understand that it's a volunteer organization. No one gets paid by the Training Foundation. I don't get paid for the Training Foundation. I mean, I don't get any money from the Training Foundation. It's all volunteer work for me. Eventually, maybe someone will be a paid administrator for the thing, but I'm not sure about that. You know, it's on the backbone of people that do hard work. My wife and Dawn and, you know, the board members, like, it's a working board. So everyone, like, takes care of a certain aspect. Fundraising is kind of like my category and marketing and stuff like that. But, I mean, it's taken us a really long time. We raised a massive amount of money based off of, like, donation classes that happen around the country. But, I mean, we also, the cool thing is we have that money, but the other cool thing is, like, we haven't figured out how to get more. And so we're just in this process of, like, figuring it out, and we're getting good, which is powerful, I think.
Powerful for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, it can mean a lot for a Mysore community. You know, like, we're all of a sudden, if a Mysore teacher wants to have, a couple people that are on scholarship, they can have a couple people on scholarship. There's some communities around the country that have 10 on the Trinity Foundation scholarship program. And so all of a sudden, like, they go from having 10 people in the room to having 20. And this is just another way of, like, me giving back. Like, that's what it is. Everyone who's, basically volunteering, it's just a way for them to give back. And we're trying to make as big of, like, social impact as we possibly can. Scholarships, teaching in treatment centers, and, like, you know, affecting change in someone's sobriety, you know, having people, like, really carry the message that yoga and mindfulness can help, you know, depression and anxiety, addiction, trauma, all of these things. And so we're at what I feel like the forefront of this amazing ability to affect change in our community just by having this tool, by having that. It's a 501c3, IRS designation of, like, a nonprofit. We have board. I mean, we have people that oversee everything that we're doing, which is important when you're dealing with this stuff. And, AYC donates a bunch of money to scholarships and donates to the Trinity Foundation. I mean, it's just like, it's like our life's work, you know? So we have more and more programming coming on consistently. We have more and more scholarships coming on consistently. But right now we're in the process of, like, really figuring out the structure, figuring out how to raise money, figuring out who our key players are and where key regions are. Where do we want to affect the change the most? Where is the, like, the worst hit communities? That's where we're going. You know, so some of the Ashtanga communities that are, we could say, like, in healthy areas, we haven't even reached out to them. And the reason why we haven't reached out to them is because, you know, West Virginia has more of a problem.
Yes.
You know, like, Southern Ohio has a worse problem than, you know, Florida has a bigger problem than, you know, South Carolina. You know, so all of a sudden it's like you start putting it together and you start getting really smart about, like, how to grow responsibly. And that's what we've done good at. I mean, our board has basically helped us really find out how to grow strategically because, you know, me, I operate.
You want to do everything right now.
I operate from a vision standpoint. You know, I don't really know the details of, like, you know, how to do the day-to-day operations.
Right.
I know how to raise money. I know how to talk about my story and help other people, like, have an opportunity to share their story, you know, through other podcasts like this. I'm the vision guy. It was my idea, you know, and so we have other people that are trusted servants that are, like, working their asses off for the Trinity Foundation. It's like, whoa. I mean, Dawn and Jessica, they work tirelessly over it. I mean, emails, social media, it's programming. I mean, Jessica is on the phone all the time, like, talking about programming. And because we all believe in it, we have an opportunity to actually say that we're part of the solution instead of part of the problem. There's no one else helping. Or, in my opinion, there's no one else helping.
It is, in my opinion, a solution to a very, very tough problem, or one of the solutions, or one of the methods that could help a community, both a Mysore community grow, but also the treatment centers, the people with trauma, the addictions.
Yeah. And we've had so many people email us and just say, like, I've had so many people email me and said, thanks for offering the scholarship to me. Like, you have no idea what that meant to me for the 90 days that I had it. And it's like, whoa.
And you see the impact that this is having.
Yeah. I mean, I talked to a guy just the other day, and I was interviewing him for a scholarship, and I wanted to give him, money. Obviously, I wanted to give him the money for a scholarship. And I ended up, basically approving it because, I mean, he was out of prison for 12 years. Or he was in prison for 12 years, got out. And he'd been 6 months out, and he said, Taylor, if I don't do yoga, I'm gonna shoot myself. And wow. I mean, he didn't say it in that way. He said, like, I'm gonna blow my friggin' head off or whatever. And he said, I recently sold my gun, and I didn't want to have my gun because I wanted to go back to prison, and I was gonna hurt myself. And I was like, well, I need to figure out how to get you classes, you know, and how to get you involved in a community. Because he felt institutionalized, which is a, you know, entirely different subject. But in prison, he was an addict. You know, he used for 12 years. It's the only way, he told me it was the only way that he could escape from, you know, prison. That and yoga. He did hatha yoga in prison. And so he would do that 5 days a week. But that was the only way that he got some sort of like, you know, peace of mind or whatever.
And now you're helping him to find his way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I am.
But
the teacher is definitely.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just provide, I'm just a resource, you know, like
this. Absolutely.
Basically, it boils down to people that need yoga don't have the money for it.
But you're providing that opportunity for them to get the yoga, which I believe is, well, it's for me the deepest possible therapy.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. It really takes you right to, it forces you to go to directly to the source of all of these negative habit patterns and the trauma. And it just, it really makes you just work on them and see them and release them and shed light on those dark areas within you.
Well, I mean, it gives perspective and it gives analysis to many different areas of our lives. And it becomes pretty freaking nuts. You know, to walk into a class every day and to do that work. I mean, sometimes I think it's crazy to do that work. I mean, because it's so easy to retreat and run away.
It is an intense, intense experience.
Yeah. And so we're just trying to provide that experience for people. I didn't want to be the one person that took yoga and, you know, my 12-step program and got a huge amount out of it and not share it with another person. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was based on, whole foundation was based off of how do we affect the same change that I had, you know, in my book and in my life and in my story and stuff. So it happened after we wrote the book.
Well, your story is also something that a lot of people can relate to. And to it was something that one of the initial things that attracted me to you and into your teaching. So I could see that how people could see how you've approached it, how you've recovered, how you continue to recover through this practice, and to for them to kind of see that opportunity within themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been amazing to watch the whole Trinity Foundation kind of come into, you know, just to come into its own. And I'm proud of the work that we're doing, and I'm proud of like the things that, that we've done so far. We're just at the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The more opportunity that you give for people to teach in these treatment centers, that just keeps the ball moving.
For sure.
Well, I mean, all wonderful things.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to share with us?
No, I appreciate you interviewing me. You know, I was looking for the right person to have this talk with, and you're pretty articulate, and I appreciate you. You know, obviously hosting one of the Heartbreak Kids shows with me. I know it's a little odd. You get to ask questions instead of me getting asked the questions, but I think there's a lot of people that maybe needed to hear my perspective on stuff too. Because this, you know, the podcast has a big audience, so awesome.
I appreciate the opportunity. I wouldn't have it any other way. And I look forward to doing the next one the next one. Right. No, I kid. But it's one of those things that we all wanted to hear from, you know, the original Heartbreak Kid. Where this comes from, what you're doing, what, you know, how we can participate over the year in the practice weeks and what's going on in the Trinity Foundation and just how Taylor's doing. So it's been nice.
Well, thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you and everything that you do for us.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit AshtangaYogaColumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is TaylorHuntYoga.com. See you guys next time.